Hello and welcome to SciGuys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey and I'm joined by the fifth SciGuy, no offense, and special guest, Lucy Kartikasari. This week we're talking about gender journeys and D-trans data, but first we have a wee review.
Oh, what does this review say, Corey?
This review is 5 stars, no offense, and it says, I love this podcast. I've learned so much. I listen to it a lot while I do my schoolwork. Help me a lot with...
Help me. Help.
This review is 5 stars, no offense, and it says, I love this podcast. I've learned so much. I listen to it a lot while I do my schoolwork. Helped me a lot with learning about ADHD and come to accept myself. Thank you so much.
Wow.
That's very kind.
Very good.
And whilst... fuck no. And before we get into the episode, as usual, I've got a question for you all. Now, if you're watching on YouTube, get down to the YouTube comments and answer this question. And if you are on Apple Podcasts, get to... Oh, God. And if you are on Spotify, get down to the Spotify spot. But if you're on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else, here is what you do. I would like for you to go to the doctors just wait for a long, long, long time. And then just tell us your answer. The waiting bit in the middle isn't necessary, but I just kind of want you, I want you to do it. For some reason, funding or money, maybe. Anyway, the question is: have you ever detransitioned or considered detransitioning? If so, why? And how do you feel about detrans or detransitioner as a label?
That's a big old question. those are several questions.
It's 2 questions.
I have not detransitioned. I've not considered it. And as a label, I think it makes sense if you transition and then you undo it. I would say that detransition makes sense. What about you, Lucy?
I think that it's a little bit more nuanced than that. I think that detrans and detransitioner have 2 different values attached to them, especially in the public arena. But I assume that we're going to get into that a lot more later.
And now we see the reason that we didn't just have no offense on this episode, because he is wrong. No. 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 So let's actually get into this episode now. So before we actually talk about any studies or anything like that, I do just want to talk about the definition of detransition, because that's something that comes up a lot. So how would you both define detransition and detrans or detransitioner?
The academic definition of detransition is to halt or reverse one's medical transition. It is distinct from the term desistance, which actually refers to basically the cessation of a trans identity. So oftentimes these terms are conflated with each other. So one can detransition and still hold a trans identity, but in my case, I have both detransitioned and desisted.
Oh, good. I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because I've got a couple different definitions from different sort of studies. So, I mean, I would agree with you. I would hope I'd agree with you because you just gave the sort of scientific definition of it. But yeah, no, what I've got here is sort of the stopping or reversal of transition, which, you know, is kind of the same sort of ballpark there. But I've got a 2021 study, which is based on the 2015 transgender survey, the US transgender survey. The question there was, have you ever gone back to living as your sex assigned at birth, at least for a while? That was then used to sort of inform factors leading to detransition amongst transgender and gender diverse people in the United States, a mixed methods analysis from 2021. Mm. That will be the study that's the one that people quote most when they talk about the reasons for detransition. That's the one where people say, the most common reason for detransition is sort of external.
Oh, like a social support kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And then another detransition study, again from 2021. There are loads of these from 2021, by the way. If you want a detrans study, I mean, I was looking at another study that looked at a bunch of them, and I think they said about over 30% of them were from 2021 exclusively.
People were getting busy during COVID.
I have a minor theory as to why that is, though.
Yeah, why?
Oh, yeah, go for it.
I think the pandemic actually did trigger a lot of, like, start of detransitions for people, because rather than being, like, living in your social gender, you were isolated at home, so then you were no longer performing gender outside, So then I guess for a lot of people, we got to the real reasons as to why we transitioned in the first place. Because I remember I really started playing with gender around the time of the pandemic when I was just stuck at home. I grew my hair out, I dyed it crazy colors, I stopped caring about pronouns. That all happened around the same time. And when I talk to other D-trans people, I notice that they have very similar experiences in realizing like, oh, maybe there's something else going on.
That makes a lot of sense. I feel like a lot of people, when they spend a lot of time at home, I feel like during the pandemic, like I went through like a phase where I just listened to all my old favorite songs, my favorite old albums, got back into old stuff that I was really interested in as a kid. And I guess like when there's nobody really watching you, it would make sense that people are more comfortable to do that.
Sorry, it sounds like you've just related. I got back into my old songs. Like, yeah, I got back into my old gender.
No,
you know?
I'm just saying
like,
that
just
like
the nostalgia.
When there's a lot of time, you can think about whatever you think about without worrying about what other people think about.
Some people became emos again. Some people became girls again.
It happens.
Love
it
that.
Happens. Yeah, and so this other study I've got, again, as I said, from 2021, this is detransition related needs and support, a cross-sectional online survey. So in this one, it says the term detransitioner will here be used to refer to someone who possibly underwent some of these medical or social detransition steps, and more importantly, who identifies as a detransitioner. They then go on to say it's important to add this dimension because the act of medical or social detransition can be performed by individuals who do not cease to identify as transgender and who do not identify as detransitioners or as members of the detrans community. That kind of gives you a bit of a spectrum of the sort of definitions that people use for detransition, but you might notice that the definitions people use for detransition often tend to relate to the reasons that they're doing the studies in the first place. For example, if you look at Lisa Littman, who boo Lisa Littman, this is a non-Lisa Littman household. We do not like Lisa Littman in this household. No Lisa Littman, please.
If she has one hater, I'm it.
If she has one hater, we have become one single person. That's what's happened, okay? Lisa Littman, when she talks about detransition, she tends to do it from the position of, I don't want trans people to exist, and so I'm going to try and find ways to justify, sort of not helping trans people. And she does that by essentially using detrans people as, not a scapegoat, but putting them up as, look, I want to help this group of people. And the only way to help this group of people is by harming this other group. Not really how
Thanks,
it works.
Lisa. Love your work.
Essentially weaponizing us.
Which has never been done before, ever, right?
Terps,
the least
people.
Weaponized community in the world.
No, exactly. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess it's really important what you brought up there, Lucy, that that detransition doesn't necessarily mean you can't identify as trans. I mean, I know loads of people who have sort of undergone some level of transition and then been like, this isn't for me. And they're non-binary or they're something else, but they've stopped medical transition or tried to reverse medical transition in some ways. And I think that's an element that is kind of ignored a lot, right? I mean, what I see most often when people talk about detransitioners is, say, that PragerU documentary, the one that our very own Noah Fince featured in.
No way.
They just took one of my YouTube videos, didn't ask about it, and just shoved my face in a documentary. Yeah, that was weird.
Oh, we can maybe get into this a bit more later, but I think it's also interesting there that the two detransitioners that they had, they sort of, again, were using, both of them described elements of conversion therapy as well. And it's like, we can get more into this later on, but I think the whole conversation around detransition has been really muddied by essentially transphobes using detransitioners as a tool to harm trans people. Which sucks because, one, it dehumanizes detransitioners. Two, it sort of sets trans people up to be wary of or against detransitioners when they have no reason to be.
Yeah, like I've spoken about detransition a few times in my videos and been like, they're literally just like us. They're going through the exact same stuff that we're going through. But for some reason, sects of like the trans community feel like detransitioners existing is somehow a threat to them. It must be a really difficult thing to navigate, especially if you're like online.
People make a lot of assumptions about my positions, my political positions, my feelings about the trans community. By the same token, I have like TERFs who try to be all buddy buddy with me, which is incredibly frustrating. I'm just like, you guys don't know what I'm about. And at the same time, I also get like seen as a trans woman very often. It actually happened quite recently when I was promoting a protest here in the Netherlands, that a TERF basically took my video and then said, this trans-identified male is calling people to enact violence on these women. This was, yes, exactly. This was by the Let Women Speak chapter of Utrecht here in the Netherlands. And I just had to, I made a counter video being like, hey, by the way, you actually on paper would see me as your prize weapon against transition in general.
Yeah.
But here you are dehumanizing me because you've made the assumption that I'm a trans woman. Do you see how that's weird and fucked up?
That's insane. That's actually insane.
You know, I find that really interesting, actually. And that was one of the reasons that I wanted to talk to you. Many, many reasons that I wanted to talk to you. But, you know, one of them being that I find it really interesting how you navigate being detrans online, and especially how you have to deal with that from sort of both sides. Because I have seen trans people be not so kind to you, but I've also seen a lot of TERFs just assume, you know, assume you're a trans woman and then treat you the way that they treat trans women, which is, spoiler alert, not very nicely. It's like, it's baffling to me that, you know, there is this kind of idea that detransitioners are sort of the silver bullet against trans people, but actually TERFs can't sort of hold in their transphobia and just hatred of anyone that doesn't align with their sort of the idea of what they should be in their head. They can't hold that in long enough to even use detransitioners as a silver bullet all the time. They're perfectly willing to jump down the throats of detransitioners if they think it's useful to them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they also like completely invalidate any position I hold as a detrans person because they're like, well, you're still brainwashed by the gender cult. And I'm just like, actually, no.
The gender cult!
Is it hard to believe that someone might have a personal philosophy that is rooted in compassion for another human being? I guess not.
What?
For them, I feel like that's kind of hard to understand.
Well, that's very rich coming from the king of the gender cult.
Okay? I know your shtick, man.
No, but I mean, I guess we could talk then about the detransition rate because we've kind of not touched on that. So what is the detransition rate?
So from what I've read and looked at, it's like close to 1% or under 1%. The highest rate I've seen is like 3% from like an actual study. I spoke to my actual gender clinic about this a couple of years ago. And yeah, what they told me is that it was less than 1% and that the biggest reason for detransition was lack of social support.
Lucy, do you have any insights onto the detransition rate?
I would actually like to dispute that 1% number, perhaps what somewhat controversially. I think that it might be a lot higher because there's plenty of people who take hormones for a few months and then they just never renew their prescription. They never go on to pursue legal transition or anything else. They don't pursue surgeries. And because they're not documented, their numbers are just unknown. So I would place the rate perhaps a bit closer to, say, somewhere between 10 and 20%. But I would like to point out as well that just because the number is higher doesn't mean that trans people and detrans people don't both deserve adequate healthcare and clinical support.
Yeah, absolutely. Would that number you say would suggest that like there are people that, because I know there are some like non-binary people that I'm friends with that have been on testosterone for a couple months. They're like, okay, got all the changes that I want. I'm good. I don't need anything else. Would that be under the same number, do you think?
I think so. I think that they would, yeah.
It's interesting with like the definition of the word detrans then, like what you were saying at the beginning about it being more nuanced.
I think you've both slightly fallen into the little trap I set with my trick question, which is, yeah, no, so we don't actually know the detransition rate, right?
Okay,
it's a really hard one to figure out. And yeah, there's sort of any number. So that study I mentioned earlier, you could say the detransition rate from that the 2021 study based on the 2015 US transgender survey, you could say that's about 13% because of all the people that they looked at in that study, I think about 13% had stopped transition at some point, whether or not they'd then gone on to continue it, right? So at any one point, you know, 13% of those people could have been detransitioners. But if we're going to talk about the detransition rate, we've got to think about why we're talking about the detransition rate, right? Most people bring up the detransition rate, I would say, to kind of say trans people are wrong. And it's like, hey, look at all these people transitioning. Well, 10% of them are wrong. 20% of them were wrong. So maybe we should stop everyone from detransitioning. And like, There is an obvious sort of flaw with that mindset. Can you think of what, like, of what any problems with sort of using any detransition rate to make sweeping judgments about gender transition? Can you sort of see any issues with sort of doing that?
I mean, one thing is that there are higher rates of regret with, like, knee surgeries than the usual detransition rate. And also, like, just because something isn't right for a couple of people doesn't mean that, like, for one person it might not be.
If I could hop in, that's exactly it, right? In that the idea that the detransition rate is somehow related to people making a mistake or something not being right for them is inherently sort of not true, right? Like, just because you've detransitioned, that doesn't mean that transitioning in the first place wasn't right for you, right? And so when we try and use the detransition rate to make any sort of sweeping judgment about transition as a whole, we're kind of ignoring what detransition is and ignoring the sort of diversity of experience of detransitioners. And I think I've spoken enough on this. Lucy, do you have anything you might want to add on to what I've just said there?
I think you've summed it up perfectly, actually. I wanted to approach it from another side because I've noticed that there are quite a few trans people who will look at the low detransition rate and they'll be like, well, see, the detransition rate is so low, we don't really need to care about these individuals specifically. I want to point out, who uses the same argument?
Yeah, no, literally, it's literally the same thing. Oh, well, we don't care if trans people don't have rights. They're like 1% of the population.
Exactly. And it's really interesting to see another marginalized community basically putting this on another marginalized community when it's like, well, the oppressive class is doing the same thing. Like, so yeah, I guess that all around we just need a lot more compassion for and support for marginalized groups, no matter where they are at in their gender journey. Sometimes you get off at a stop and it's not your final destination. And that's completely okay.
No, absolutely. I think you said something really important there, wherein people do forget to think of D-trans people as a group that we do need to care about. I think one of those reasons, and this is not justifying it, just more explaining for anyone who might not understand, I think one of those reasons definitely comes from the way that detransitioners have kind of been put up as a sort of, as I said, silver bullet against trans people. So trans people sort of reflexively want to be like, oh, well, no, let's ignore this group. Like, no, they're actually not sort of, you know, they don't deny our humanity. Do you know what I mean? Like, this group of people doesn't mean that we can't transition. And that kind of reflexive, like, no, let's just ignore them, I understand where it comes from. I don't think it's justifiable, but it's almost exactly what you would want if you were a TERF, right? Pit two marginalized groups against each other. It's like the age-old tactic of, you know, pitting groups that if they joined up together would be stronger. Just pit them against each other. Make them fight amongst themselves.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's such like a toxic environment to be in. And I've seen it like within my own community where I've had to like speak to people that I'm like friends with or even know, where I'm just like, something that like I've felt like over the years is that there is not too much of a difference between the D-trans experience and the trans experience. Like, we're going through the same things, we're having the same struggles. And like even Lucy said, you were like assumed to be a trans woman. So like every day, like D-trans people are treated as bad as trans people or worse than trans people, because not only are they having that experience where they're experiencing transphobia essentially, but they're also being told by people that are, you know, putting out that transphobia that they should be used for this like toxic kind of weapon thing. And it's such a difficult thing to navigate. There's no right answer.
I think that there's also this other component of like misunderstanding from both trans people and cisgender people, in the sense that trans people would not, or perhaps do not want to, or just they can't understand why someone would want to detransition in the first place, one. Whereas cis people have this perception of like, they do not understand why someone would want to transition in the first place. So we have like this fundamental disconnect between these three groups of like, no one really understands exactly why one would transition and then transition again. And it just happens to be that the disconnect starts at different points in the journey, basically.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because I think that disconnect then causes so many problems, right? Like, I kind of touched on this already, but, you know, not understanding people who sort of detransition kind of leads you to then be like, oh, well, the only reason that people could detransition is if they've made a mistake, right? That is very much a view, you know, like, I've been guilty of that before as well, saying, you know, well, just because some people have made a mistake, it doesn't mean that you should then harm a whole other group. Again, pitting people against each other by presenting detransition as exclusively people who were tricked into being trans, but now realize they aren't. Like, it's kind of all comes together. And that's why I really like the sort of content that you make, Lucy, because that's kind of enlightened me. Oh, yeah. Even though I knew people who had detransitioned in real life, you know, I'd never really fully thought through the greater picture until I'd seen the content that you make, which is fantastic, by the way. But yeah, no, I really sort of appreciate that viewpoint, because I, you know, not to put words in your mouth, but I'm sure I've heard you say before sort of that you don't regret transitioning, that was just sort of a part of your journey.
I do see it as part of my journey. I don't harbor any ill will towards the doctors who diagnosed me, because, like, I mean, I was diagnosed by 3 different psychologists. Like, they individually had to diagnose me. Like, I went through an incredibly rigorous system. So there are people out there who say, oh, it's so easy to transition. It was not. It was not easy for me to get a clinical diagnosis of gender dysphoria, which was necessary at the time for me to access medical care. But at the same time, if I look at the way my life is now, the experience that I've had, the friends I've made over the years, none of those experiences would have been possible had I not transitioned in the first place. And I'm so eternally grateful for that, that yes, okay, I may have undergone a double mastectomy. Maybe I've had an oophorectomy. Maybe I was on testosterone for nearly a full decade, but none of that detracts from my womanhood and how strong of a woman I am today. I'm proud of myself.
I love that. I feel like there is this tendency. I mean, like, even like growing up on like trans med Twitter when I was like 2016, like
if you were 2016 in years 2016, old,
like there is such this like this view where like, and I've seen it reinforced by like anti-trans detransitioners, where there's this like mourning, and absolutely like the way that people feel about their body, that is their own view. But yeah, I feel like identity is so individual to the person. So trying to tar everybody with the same brush, trying to say that like every detransitioner is like full of regret and like sadness and like mourning over their experience. It's like it's really just like beautiful to hear that like the stuff that you've gone through and the stuff that you're like continuing to talk about is just like it's just part of your life.
I mean, to like also like maybe make it more like realistic and also like go into a little bit of like the regret that I do have. It's like, okay, I know that I regret my top surgery revision. That is something that I wish I had not done. I have some minor regrets and like some doubts surrounding like my oophorectomy. It does have upsides, but at the same time, I know that there are downsides, like for my fertility, for instance. Like, say I do want to have children in the future, that will be something that will be a bit more difficult unless I adopt or choose to do some other go for some other method. But I will overcome those challenges when I meet them. And I know that I've evolved enough to be strong as I am now. Who's to say that I won't be able to overcome those challenges in the future? I think that also detransitioning has also given me a weird sense of confidence of like, I've switched genders twice. Like, come on, I've done it twice. It's already hard to transition once. I've done it again. Like, jeez. I can overcome anything now.
Yeah, trans people, you've only done this once.
This ain't my...
That's child's play.
This ain't my first rodeo. Were you about to say that? Oh my god, that's incredible.
I deserve some, like, a gender journey street cred here, I feel like.
So, I kind of asked the question earlier, you know, if you could see any issues with using the detransition rate to make sweeping judgments about gender transition. And, you know, we've come up with a lot of issues. I just want to kind of rattle off some that I came up with and put down in my notes, if you don't mind. We might have gone over them, but my memory ain't so good because the ADHDs. Anyway, so basically, from what we can tell, detransition, it's not inherently a permanent state, right? Like, you can temporarily detransition. In fact, like, lots of people do temporarily detransition because the environment they're in is hostile to trans people. Crazy that. Never would have expected that. But no, you know, people can temporarily detransition, so kind of saying this group of people have all detransitioned, yeah, if we kind of parse out the reasons, how many of these people have detransitioned because that's sort of, you know, that's the choice that they've made, that's sort of like what they want to do? How many have done it because that's the safest thing for them to do at that point? How many have done it because that's the thing that they can afford? You know, you might not be able to afford to you know, to continue medical transition, depending on where you are in the world, right? There are so many reasons for detransition, all of them valid, and I don't think any of them undermine any others, because everyone is an individual, obviously, yeah. Right? And that kind of brings me on to, you know, detransitioners aren't a homogenous group, right? Some detrans people can still be trans, as Lucy's kind of mentioned earlier, right? Like, I mean, we can already name between the two of us, Noah, a few people who we know who have, you know, technically, by the absolute sort of technical definition, detransitioned, but still identify as trans.
Yeah.
And then also, detrans people can still define themselves as neither trans nor cis, because their experiences are different from both groups. I mean, like Lucy, you know, you experience transphobia that a trans woman would experience. That's different than, you know, what most cis women would experience. But saying that, right, there are cis women who have never detransitioned, right? Like, as TERFs would say, the sort of most womany of all women, right, who still get treated as trans women because their features, you know, look too masculine.
General's heteronormativity has, like, rotted transphobes brains to the point where, like, they will treat everybody that isn't, like, the straight-up definition of what they think a woman is in the worst ways possible.
I don't know if this is true or not. I feel like I've seen this online, and it might be, like, an Onion article, because it's hard to tell those from reality nowadays. But did you see the story of the two cis women who harassed each other in the toilets because they both thought the other was trans?
No, but I can't believe that happened.
I saw it.
Is that true? Is that like a true story?
I'm not sure. I want to believe that it's true because it's also hilarious. The two transphobes are just like clocking each other like that.
It's like that Spider-Man meme.
No, absolutely, right? Okay, whether that's true or not, there are absolutely cases of cis people being harassed when they're in the quote-unquote correct bathrooms because someone has just assumed they're trans. And I think, you know, it's difficult to do an episode on detransition without talking about transition. And I don't want to sort of get away from talking about detransition too much. But it is all tied together, right? As you've kind of said, it is all part of the same struggle in a way. This sort of gender critical nonsense bullshit affects everyone, whether, you know, you've transitioned, detransitioned, whether you've not done any of that at all, right? Like, it is just a cancerous, harmful ideology at its core, and it doesn't care about any of the people it purports to care about.
Yeah,
by virtue of the fact that, you know, every single group can be harmed under this ideology, yeah. And they are. And so basically, look, it's hard to draw conclusions from detransition rates alone, because not all detransitioners view transition as a mistake or something negative at all.
And they're not all reported either.
Yeah, absolutely.
like, if we don't have every single person in the population, like, we're not going to get... I feel like it's one of those things where you, like... Unless there was, like, a census for detransitions. But I don't think that's a good idea.
I mean...
You do think it's a good idea.
Well, I do know of some researchers who are doing excellent work in documenting detransition in a way that that is not meant to be weaponized for transphobia. Dr. Kinnan McKinnon is a really good example of someone who studies detransition. But he himself is a trans man. And highly recommend you check out his work, and maybe I should have mentioned this before the episode. And he actually had this really, really interesting definition of detransition at the end of one of his studies, where in this study, he posited that we should not view the D as a negative prefix for detransition, but rather interpret it to mean of or from, when someone is of transgender origin, so that they're post-trans in a way, which is how I define my identity. I think that cis-trans is a binary that I do not fit in. I have moved beyond this binary to another place because my gender experience is different to that of cisgender women, is different to that of transgender women. I was asked recently, like, how is your experience any different to a masculine cis woman's? And it's like, I can't even fall back on my paperwork right now to, if someone asks me, like, are you a woman? It's like, well, legally, I'm still male. I still have a traditionally masculine name. When I have a new intimate partner, I have to explain things about my body that cis women do not have to. I have a very materially different, and at the same time, it's dissimilar. It's similar, but dissimilar to trans women, because I'd be like, well, I do have XX chromosomes. I was assigned female at birth, unlike trans women. So it is a unique gender experience that does not fit in the model that we have now. So it's something else. It's a bit more nuanced.
I'm learning so much. I appreciate this so much because it's so nice to hear that. Like, and I love that. Like, D not being a negative thing, but being like a of transition. Sorry, I'm like processing this like as I'm saying it, but like that's really interesting.
No, absolutely. Do you know what? I'm glad you brought that up. That it's cool that you know McKinnon. Me using a surname because I've only read the name in science papers. I've actually read his work. It's
oh, really?
Some of his work is already in the references. Yeah, absolutely. One in particular, Detransition Needs Further Understanding, Not Controversy. And then I've also read, outside of this in the past, Healthcare Experiences of Patients Discontinuing or Reversing Prior Gender-Affirming Treatments. Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm so glad you brought him up. That's incredible. But yeah, no, I mean, like, from what I could get from his work, it's...
We're mutuals on TikTok.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
I know him.
Mental. Sick. Small world, isn't it? Right? Honestly, this keeps on happening. But yeah, no, the point being that, I mean, if you look at sort of McKinnon's work, I think what you'll see is, hey, we need to study this more and also not just like shove it into controversy is the main thing. Well, not the main thing, but one of the sort of key points you'll see there. But absolutely. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, a little bit of behind the scenes. I was talking to some scientists that I know to see the possibility of like producing some kind of survey that we could use this platform and the platforms of other people sort of that are friends of the podcast to share around, you know, to have a sort of, you know, unbiased sort of survey of the detrans sort of population to understand sort of what's going on, the reasons for detransition, a potential detransition rates, right? Obviously, it wouldn't be sort of as rigorously scientific as it could be because I'm just someone that studied science at uni and now has a podcast. But I have, you know, I have spoken.
Sounds like a qualification to me.
No, but I have spoken to scientists who have been on the podcast before. I don't want to name names, but you know, I have spoken to people.
Stephen Hawking, you know.
You know, yes, Stephen Hawking, noted, what is it, sort of sociologist. Yeah.
No, I'm just pulling out names. Elon Musk?
Not a scientist.
I know, I'm joking.
Even if he wants to be.
Yeah.
Hey, he might be able to buy a science company and then say that he's a scientist. That's usually what he does. But no, you know, and this might materialize at some point. I do want to try at some point to use this platform to get a survey out there that does genuinely try to understand this population, because I think I wouldn't even say, yeah, almost more so than trans people right now. I think the detrans population is severely misunderstood.
100%. Well, wait, they're misunderstood by trans people and cis people. Like even I, like every new thing that I learn, I'm like, oh shit. And I think back to like when I was 16, I was just like, oh, it's just like 1% of the population. It doesn't matter. Like even that, like what you mentioned today, I was like, even now I'm thinking about stuff like that where I'm like, I don't know enough myself.
Absolutely.
And people see me as like this like person that like knows everything trans, where it's just like detrans is something that like I feel like everybody, like every population needs to know more about just in terms of like understanding.
Noah, if it makes you feel any better, I used to be neck deep in the TransMed Tumblr.
Oh, the Tumblr scene. Okay.
I was actively participating in a discourse. I was incredibly transmedicalist. And I find it interesting because I've noticed it in a lot of my detrans friends is that most of us were hardcore transmedicalists. I feel like you need to study the transmedicalist to detrans pipeline. I feel like that's something that you definitely need to take
away. Oh, sorry. The journey you have been through. Tumblr, transmed, okay.
I've been all over the political spectrum as well. Like, I've had many different evolutions over the course of my life.
That's incredible. Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
I think it is, but it's rather quiet this time.
Well, Luke, we want to keep a big old secret about this Sci Guys merch.
Yes. please do not tell anybody and do not purchase any of it. Otherwise, people will find out.
They might see you wearing our merch or displaying our merch and think, oh, wow, what a cool person. And I'll tell you this, as a cool person myself, having people think you're a cool person can be very, very stressful.
Yeah, we can't have that. And we also can't have you supporting the show to exist that you're enjoying right now.
Yeah, so absolutely, under no circumstances should you go to normalcitizen.store and pick up some Sci Guys merch. Some Sci Guys merch like beanies and posters and t-shirts and calendars and cool stuff like that. Definitely don't go to that store and buy that.
Goodness me, that's an awful lot of stuff that I'm not going to purchase.
Absolutely, Luke. Now let's get back to the show before anyone listens to us.
God, I really hope we got away with that one.
So, I do have a question for you, right? We've already kind of discussed that, you know, using detransition rates alone is not a good way to understand trans people, detransition, transition, any of that. It's too widespread. The groups are not necessarily sort of homogenous. We can't get much from just looking at a detransition rate alone, even if we can get a sort of easy single number for detransition rates. So can you think of any better metrics to understand the effectiveness or benefits of transition, since that's what people, you know, who use detransition rates to understand things, that's what they're trying to get at generally?
I think that the main thing that we need to do is have more qualitative understanding. So people speaking out about their experiences. So what I try to do with my content, basically talking about the struggles that I face as a detrans woman, the alienation that I experience on both sides of the spectrum of both cis and trans people, and also just being frank and honest and showing that a detransition life is not necessarily a bad thing. Because what I've noticed the most is that the struggles come into play when detransitioners and detrans people are not supported adequately. So in my specific case, I've been incredibly fortunate to have a friend group. My family is very, very accepting. They're very like, oh, we do not care about what your gender presentation is. So long as you are happy, it does not matter to us what you do. And I think that, along with the time that I've spent in this body, has led me to be very accepting of it. I've lived in my transitioned body for so long that I actually do not know any other body. So it's like time heals all wounds, and that vitriolic hatred that someone might feel initially when they realize like, oh, I need to detransition, and then perhaps they've just had a mastectomy or something like that, that can be tempered with adequate support. I think that's the main thing that we need to do.
I love that. I feel like we also have like a tendency to see trans people or detrans people like as like a monolith, where like you hear that label, you hear that word, you automatically assume everything about them. I have people commenting on my videos like, oh, so you think that like you should trans people, you want to force me to sleep with you? Like, even just like that assumption is so common. So I feel like absolutely like qualitative studies make sense, like actually listening to detrans people rather than just assuming what they think and assuming what their experience is probably the most important thing into understanding.
Groundbreaking, yeah. Yeah. I'm not making fun of you there, but like, no, yeah. Absolutely, listening to these people. And, you know, you brought up Kinnan McKinnon earlier, Lucy, and there is a study that Kinnan has done, or there is a paper I've got from Kinnan McKinnon here, Detransition Needs Further Understanding, Not Controversy. And quite literally, it just goes into sort of a lot of these elements of the sort of the care that people who have detransitioned need, and how those sort of care needs are wide ranging. You know, there are people who like see it as an important part of their journey. There are people who feel grief for, over transitioning and then detransitioning. There are loads of different experiences there that need to be sort of met and aided in a way, right? And if I could just quickly move back to talking about trans people momentarily, right? And again, I really don't like having to talk about sort of transness so much in this conversation and pull it away from a detransition. But I think, unfortunately, the way that the sort of public conversation of this has gone, it's almost necessary to bring these things up, right? Because if you use detransitioners as a sort of, as I've said many times, silver bullet, right? The 2022 transgender survey, you know, the one where we've got you know, some information on people who have detransitioned from the 2015 version. Mm. The 2022 detransition, the 2022 detransition survey? No, the 2022 transgender survey in the US, they showed 94% positive feelings towards, or satisfaction towards transition, 98% satisfaction for hormone treatment, 97% satisfaction with surgery, right? So the reason I'm saying this is to anyone who's listening, who is, you know, sort of, let's say, you know, one of them trans activists, like little Noah Fince over here, you know, people who have detransitioned aren't a threat to you, right? Detransition rates aren't a threat to you. We've already got like pretty overwhelming data that transition is, you know, good for people that it's good for. The fact that, you know, transition doesn't necessarily help everyone does not mean that, you know, we shouldn't have, that we shouldn't limit access to transition. Mm. In fact, I kind of want to draw a sort of similarity here between the experience of sort of people who have transitioned and people who have detransitioned, in that, like, when I'm listening to a lot of the stuff that you're saying, Lucy, I see a lot of similar things to trans people talking about their experiences, right? Like, you know, my nuclear sort of trans take that I've said in an episode before was, you know, if you're a TERF and you're saying that these detransition rates are the reason that we need to sort of halt transition for everyone, that doesn't really make sense until you get to a point where it's like 50-50 or more, because ultimately, a lot of the experiences of people who have detransitioned are pretty similar to gender dysphoria in the first instance, right? Like, obviously, there are loads of differences, but the similarities there lie in, you know, well, my body isn't necessarily the way that I'd want or expect it to be, or I'm going to have these difficulties in, you know, in these areas of life, right? Like, when you focus on the needs of detrans people over trans people, you end up just creating a group that have got, you know, gender dysphoria that is sort of harming their life, right? And when you flip it around and do the opposite, you're going to do the same thing, but just to a different group of people.
Yeah,
right?
I think we just need to care about all people and their needs.
What?
I think there's. I mean, it's easy even for like cis people to ignore the needs of trans people, let alone detrans people. But yeah, I think it's definitely something that just like, it's not. We're not doing a good job of it right now.
Yeah, I mean, the point is that it's the same fight in the same way that, you know, LGBTQ people are all sort of lumped in together. Yeah, the struggles of gay people aren't one-to-one with the struggles of bisexual people. They're not one-to-one with the struggles of trans people. But we all come together because there are shared struggles, and joining together helps. And, oh, Lucy, you look like you've got something to say on that.
I absolutely have something to say about that, because I've had people come up to me and online, they've come up to me, and they've said, no, once you've detransitioned, you're no longer part of the queer community. You're not allowed to call yourself LGBTQ anymore. And it's like,
shut up.
I'm sorry, I have a gender diverse experience. When you say LGBTQ+, what do you think that plus is supposed to include?
It's just there for fun.
Look, I'm not asking to insert a D anywhere there. That sounded that sounded wrong.
Sorry. Continue.
Look, I'm not asking to add another letter to the alphabet mafia. I'm content being part of the plus, but I would really like to be included in that plus, you know? I don't think that's wrong. Like I've said a few times before already, my experiences are parallel to that of trans women. And I'm not trying to co-opt trans women experiences, but like, I understand the struggles of having to voice train. I understand undergoing laser hair removal. I understand that. But at the same time, I also understand what it's like to bind, get top surgery, take testosterone, experience hot flashes when you don't have any hormones. Like, I know what that feels like, all of those things. So why am I not queer?
You're like the Avatar, you know, master of all elements. Master of all trans experiences. I know them all. I've felt them all. And
I'm the last gender bender.
No.
Please. That was incredible. That was, oh my God. The fact that I even see, like, within my own community of people that, like, I assume would have everybody's best interests at heart, I see people kind of, like, push away. Like, I personally think we need me. Oh my God, we need me.
I personally think we need me. No offense.
I'm trying to speak. I personally think we need more detrans voices in the discussions about like transitioning. That feels like common sense to me. Like, and I feel like we should be considering all perspectives, because it's not a black and white thing. There's not just one way to transition. There's not just one way to detransition. And yeah, it's just really strange to me it's not strange to me that that's an experience you've had, because I can absolutely see the kinds of people that would do that. But like, I understand it comes from fear, where like trans people assume that detrans people are there to weaponize. They feel like that's the default. Like, you don't detransition from being trans, you transition into being a transphobe. Like, that is, mm-hmm. I've literally seen people say that. And I just think it's insane that we've let this fear of that weaponization exclude detrans voices from the conversation, because they're very necessary.
I think that for a lot of detransitioners, and especially ones, I've also lived stealth as a man, which is quite an experience. So I've also understood what it's like to experience being perceived as a cis man in society. Mm. I feel like detrans people have a very broad spectrum understanding of gender experiences, being perceived yeah. as a cis woman or cis girl, a trans woman, a trans guy, a cis guy, like all of that. It all comes together.
No, but I also find that very interesting, because like even myself, like as a trans person, like I obviously know what it's like to experience life like being perceived as a girl, being perceived as, and it's not just being perceived as a girl, it's being perceived as people assuming me as a lesbian. So like that's one yeah. thing, being assumed as a straight girl, being assumed as a lesbian is a different thing, being assumed as like genderqueer, being assumed as a trans man, being treated as a cis man, being in on those conversations, like in the bathrooms, where like, I feel like it's such like, it's an exclusively experience that like we will have, mm-hmm. where we have gone through the phases where like, we've seen what it's like to be treated as women. We've seen the shit that we get treated as. And then when you go behind closed doors and you're accepted as a man, you hear the conversations that they have. And I think there's so much value in that. And the fact that like, you've had like every single, like every, you've ticked every single box, you've had every single experience. It's just like, It's just a frustrating thing that like because of how toxic the environment is, that like there are people like who like we should all be on the same side, like we're all fighting the good fight, and I think if you're a trans person and your thing is like everybody should be accepted, we shouldn't exclude people who. Probably, I honestly, like, I feel like I'm learning so much from you, more so than I have, like, ever learned from, wait, is that a bad thing to say? More so than I have, like, ever learned from another trans person in a conversation about this. And I think it's just such a shame that, like, we have almost, like, devalued detrans voices because we're scared.
First of all, thank you so much for that high praise. That's really sweet. But what I wanted to touch on is the amount of money that goes into funding detrans voices. But very specific ones. So like, if I meditate on this a lot, not something that I would do, obviously, but it's something that I consider of like, should I switch sides, so to speak? And do you see? If I changed my tune and I started speaking, just basically become a transphobe, transition into being a transphobe, if you will, I would bet real good money.
The last experience you don't have.
Yeah, that's the one thing this is a bit too much for me. You know, I'm just tapping out here. if I change my tune, I imagine that it would be incredibly easy for me to basically join the conservative talk show circuit and basically be used as a weapon, because there is a lot of money. If you look at, what's his name? I think it's Joseph Edelman. He has spent a massive amount of money on the organization Do No Harm. I think Aaron Reed wrote a piece about this. And basically, he spent like $1 million on Do No Harm. Do No Harm is a transphobic organization that basically promotes detransitioners to basically be transphobic. So like, when you see detransitioners, especially in the US, being shipped around from hearing to hearing, he's funding
I've seen that.
I really wonder about the amount of support these detransitioners get when they're no longer, when the cameras are off. Like, when you're constantly being told by the people around you, when you're being made to say, my body is mutilated, I am ruined, I'm destroyed, in front of thousands of people, millions of people, how, what does that do to your psyche? What does that do to your sense of self? I feel like the reason why I'm balanced and happy about the fact that I transitioned and detransitioned is because I had that supportive environment and I had people around me telling me, you're whole, complete, and we love you. That's really important for anyone's sense of self-worth.
I know exactly what you're saying, because I personally had a friend that was also like a trans YouTuber that just made content like being like, this is how I feel about myself, who detransitioned and was picked up by that PragerU documentary where they included a video of me. And I know what you're saying about the lack of support is so right, because I genuinely, I feel like it's very crystal clear how obvious it is that the only reason that they actually like care about these people is it because they're willing to be paid to parrot their argument. But yeah, I think it's such a shame, because like I feel like there are very few spaces, or at least I haven't seen them, for that kind of support. Like there are so many trans support groups, like on the internet, on Facebook, in real life. And I feel like I've yet to, obviously, like because I'm not like in the detrans community, but I've not really seen a space like that for detrans people. And I think absolutely that just makes it easier for them to, you know, be like swept up by these people being like, here we go, lots of money. Talk about your experience. And I can't imagine how harrowing that would be, like what that would do to your sense of self. Because even in this PragerU documentary where this detrans person was talking about like how mutilated she was and how just like the connotation surrounding those words is as if she was speaking as though like she was broken. And the comments weren't necessarily supportive of her. A lot of them were just like, oh, it's so pathetic that these people have done this. So like even the side that is giving them money, they're not moderating the comments. They're not giving them a space where they will have those support. I just think it's like, I don't even have a word for it other than like, it's just such a shame. It's really horrible to see.
Just goes to show how important it is to have solid clinical support for detrans people.
Yeah.
When I went to the gender clinic here in the Netherlands to say that I wanted to switch from taking testosterone to taking estrogen, one, I was told this is incredibly rare, like this is uncommon. So I felt, well, kind of isolated and alienated.
Yeah.
That, like, okay, I'm one of very, very few. But then they also were like, oh,
thanks for the reassurance.
Yeah, like, thank you. But one thing that struck me is like, well, there aren't any support groups for this. Like, you can have one-on-one therapy, but you can't really connect with other people. And I think that lack of clinical support is it just has like this, it makes it so easy to get swept up by this group that wants to weaponize you. But I also want to touch on how toxic trans spaces can be towards detransitioners and detrans people. This is not my personal experience, but I know of several people, people in my circle, close detrans friends of mine who have been part of queer groups and support groups, and they'll come out as detrans to, like, you know, one of the board members or organizers of the group, and they'll be told, you can't call yourself detrans. If you do that, you will be removed from this group. Because people are so scared of what it means for someone, because how that reflects on their own transition.
They see it as a personal failure of like, which is absolutely not a personal failure. People's identity is not a success or a failure. It's their identity.
And ultimately, like, a lot of that comes from this sort of PragerU, Posey Parker, all of these sort of gender critical, just outright transphobic people presenting the only view of detransition as being a sort of anti-trans thing, which it just isn't.
I mean, I can also freely admit, part of the reason why it took so long for me to detransition, so for context, I started transitioning socially at 12, medical transition at 16. I began detransitioning at 26, and I am 28 now. So my main thing was, like, I had never, in basically that entire 14-year stint, had I ever seen an example of a detrans person who was trans-inclusive and pro-trans. I had not seen that. There was no representation for me. It was only, like, when, at the very end, that I stumbled on one person, Aaliyah Ismail, just a quick little plug, she's great. And she just basically showed me, like, yes, you can actually detransition and still be pro-trans. Like, that is completely fine. Mm. You're not violating any ideology or any kind of value for you to detransition. Yeah. This is a personal decision that you're making for yourself. And that lack of representation made me not want to detransition for a long time. Even if I had, like, doubts here and there, like, yeah, maybe I could. I was like, no, but I'm a dude. And also, I'm trans. Like, I just was in a lot of denial for quite some time. There was no representation. So, yeah, that also motivated me to start making TikToks, because it's like, if you don't have an example of what it would look like, then how could you? Okay, so I have this metaphor that I use a lot, it also in, like, lectures and stuff, when I describe this experience of, like, when I initially transitioned socially at 12, I want to say that transition was kind of like a dirt path, like, in a forest, right? Like, there is a path, it's a bit shadowy, there's trees and bushes, but, like, there is a path, right? And then over the, like, next 10, 15 years, like, that path evolved into, like, a well-paved road. Like, okay, sure, there are people who put roadblocks there, here and there, whether it's, like, legal, financial, etc. But there is a road. But detransition, to me, always felt like veering off into the forest with a machete. And there's predators, basically, at every corner who want to jump on you. Right-wingers, TERFs, hyper-religious folks who want to use you as, like, an example of, like, Jesus saved you or whatever have you.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it's dark and scary, and you just have to be so lucky to find someone else who's also hacking their way through the undergrowth to just figure out how to navigate this.
I don't want to do the thing like, oh, that's kind of like what trans people experience again. It just feels like so insanely obvious that, like, for me at least, like, having a community of people that made me feel like I wasn't crazy for having the feelings that I felt was the thing that, like, allowed me to actually accept myself. And the fact that in the community where you should be having those conversations and you should have that support, the fact that, like, you are turned away purely for your own feelings is, like, insane to me. Insane in the sense that, like, that's so, like, that's such an oxymoron for what the community should be. But absolutely, like, even like in my own experience, like, I came out in 2017, I knew when I was, maybe in 2014, I knew I was trans. And even then in the UK, like, you had to go on support groups to find out information about how to transition, about where to go, about who to speak to. And I can imagine even now, in terms of, like, detrans spaces, there isn't even that level of support. Like, that there's not even that baseline support where, like, you can easily find a community. And yeah, like, that dirt track in the middle of the forest, like, that is, like, visceral.
I can also add something else on about the danger of peer-to-peer support for detrans people. Because we're often emotionally vulnerable, psychologically vulnerable, you don't really know who's going to change dramatically, because we've undergone such massive shifts in our identity. You don't know who's going to turn around and become a trad wife. You don't know who's going to convert to a religion and become really, really into that. You don't know who's going to become a rad fem. You don't know who's going to retransition again. You just don't know who's going to, what kind of identity shifts people are going to undergo. And that's why that clinical support is so important, to have that formal support from an entity that is not in the community, that can basically steer you away from, like, dangerous paths that might not be good for you. Like, maybe being a trad wife is not the way to go after you've had such a massive shift in your identity. It's like, yes, you can wear dresses and stuff, but, like, maybe don't start, I know, drinking red pill Kool-Aid or something. Like, there's so many things you should not do. And it's dangerous.
Yeah, you can wear dresses and not be racist. That's allowed. You can wear dresses and not be transphobic. I mean, hell, you know, many people do it. I've done it. You've done it. We've all done it. But no, I mean, what you're saying there, what both of you are saying, is borne out both anecdotally and in the data. I mean, again, if you look at sort of McKinnon's work, there's an entire paper. Detransition needs, healthcare experiences of patients discontinuing or reversing prior gender-affirming treatments, right? One of the things that's brought up here is that there's just not enough clinical support there. Mm. It basically sort of parroting exactly what Lucy has been saying there. And I think that's really important. I mean, you've kind of touched on something I wanted to bring up as well, really briefly, which is conversion therapy. We've done, I think, an entire episode on conversion therapy, so you can go and watch that if you'd like. It's torture, it's not therapy. Spark Notes, that's it, right? But yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think what you find is that with a lot of these people who are being propped up as the detransitioners to go to all of these sort of hearings and whatnot, the ones that are in PragerU documentaries, you know, you mentioned Daisy, who is in that PragerU documentary. I mean, for a video that I've been making for a while, it's going to come out at some point, but I mean, I have my notes for that open here. I've got a screenshot of some of her tweets that I find interesting, wherein, you know, she says, transition still plagues me today. I still fantasize about being a guy at least a few times a week. I'm often a guy in my dreams, but now I know that I can't indulge those fantasies. I have to be the best mother/wife I can be. Jesus Christ is my only hope. He is your only hope too, right? Like, if that's your experience, that's fine. But reading that, it just smacks to me of someone who is having religion forced on them.
That's not an internal thought that you have, like, without people telling you who you should be. Yeah.
Exactly. And the other person in that documentary, literally within the documentary, and I find this genuinely shocking and disturbing, describes one of the most sort of barbaric sort of means of conversion therapy. Like, quite literally, his father taking him down to Mexico and forcing him to do something that, you know, that would fix him and make him straight and make him, you know, a man. I don't want to get like too deep into what it is, because it is horrible, right? But these are the two people that they're propping up. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and be like, I know what your gender is. I know whether your detransition is what's right for you or anything. I'm not in the business to say that for them or for anyone, you know. But what I will say is, when the people that you prop up as, you know, sort of figureheads of detransition, to say, look, this is what detransition is. It is inherently anti-trans. People who detransition prove that being trans is not something that anyone should do. Mm-hmm. What if you do that, and the two people you've got as your figureheads have given up very clear signs of conversion therapy? I don't know. I feel like, you know, it kind of calls into question that ideal as a whole, which inherently harms, you know, trans people and detrans people, or people who have detransitioned, because it presents the idea that detransition is antithetical to transness, which throughout this conversation, I hope anyone that's watching or listening has understood that that's just absolutely not the case. There's more, I would say, you know, I mean, I as a cis man, I'll say this, I'll come out and I'll speak for everyone, and I'll say, I think there are far more similarities sort of within the sort of detrans and trans communities, sort of between them rather, than there are differences, right? You know, there are far more things shared amongst these groups than there are differences between them. And we need to stop letting a stake be driven between these two groups that ultimately should join together and fight the good fight.
I think growing up queer as a whole in the time that we live in is incredibly confusing. Mm-hmm. And I think this is something that we, like me and Corey, have spoken about, the fact that like there isn't like a default blueprint that like a couple of us, that there's no blueprint way of living your life. There's no idea, there's no clue of like what having kids looks like, what having a marriage looks like, of what having a family looks like. And I think, Jesus Christ, like if my only representation was people that were doing things because of money, or like if my only representation of trans people was like Blair White, like I do not know what kind of place I would be in now. And I think that absolutely just speaks to like how important representation is.
Diverse stories
in every regard for every group of people. Diverse stories, exactly. And that's again the problem that like everybody has just been painting as a monolith. Like we're all being painted as if we all have the exact same viewpoints, and that the fact that like detrans voices are pushed down, and the only way that they are pushed up is in transphobic conservative documentaries, it's not doing anybody any favors.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, look, I mean, I know there's going to be comments here being like, this is called the science of detransition, and you've barely spoke about the science. It's because there's not enough. I mean, literally, if I talk about the science of detransition, if we talk about McKinnon's work, literally the things that are said in that, we need more understanding of this. Mm. And I don't feel confident coming here to this podcast and sharing, you know, all of these studies that I have read, you know, a lot of them anti-trans studies. I'm not going to share a Lippmann study and be like, this gives us an accurate understanding of detransition, because of course it doesn't, when you look, when you've got, you know, a lot of your data coming from r/dysphoric women and r/gender critical. And when you've got the reputation that Lippmann has, you know, such that she put her survey on r/MTF and r/FTM, but the mods deleted it from both of them, because why the hell would trans spaces want to allow someone like Lisa Lippman to use data from trans people, right? Like, it is so hard to find unbiased data here. And that's why this episode was maybe a little bit lighter in sort of quantitative data, but there's a lot of qualitative stuff there. And again, you know, you look in the description, you could see all of these sort of studies that are just saying we don't know enough and we need to know more. And the only way we can know more is if we kind of remove this from controversy, because the controversy is inherently making it difficult to study and understand this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's basically all I've got to say on this. I mean, Lucy, do you have anything else you want to add before we finish up?
I just want to talk about like a little thing that I want to promote for everyone in a wonderful queer and colorful community. It's something that I put on protest signs. It's something I put in my bio. It's something that I really feel like should be the baseline of what we're striving for together. And that's D-trans solidarity with the D in parentheses, because, well, I mean, we're very similar. Our experiences are so parallel. We all suffer under transphobia. We have everything to gain from being each other's strongest allies rather than these vicious adversaries that people want us to be.
Lucy, very aware of like the trans med pipeline. I feel like a lot of people that are very online, that have grown up in the queer community, are very aware of like how divisive these kind of conversations can be. But yeah, I think it's just important. And I'm speaking to the transgenders right now, the ones that follow me, that recognize my face and clicked on this video. You are doing nobody any service by excluding D-trans people from the conversation. We have a lot that we could learn. I obviously have a lot that I could learn. And I think, yeah, I think the most important thing is like sticking together, because we're all in here for the right reasons, I would hope. And it's very easy for people outside of the community who have a vested interest in, you know, splitting people up. It's very easy for them to just put money into something and to make everybody hate each other and to make everybody's time much harder. So yeah, I think absolutely, like, parroting what Lucy said, like, we more love. Lucy existing has no negative effect on me. She's actually like I have learned so much. But yeah, I think we just need to make more of an effort to include diverse voices, even if they're voices that are like maybe growing up as a trans med on Twitter, even if it's hard to swallow the fact that like transition isn't right for everybody, or transition isn't the end result for everybody.
I would agree with everything both of you have said. And if there's anyone out there who needs to hear it from a cis man, yeah, that's all good. That's all fine by me.
He's your guy.
We might get a white cis man for all the racists out there who need to hear it from one of them. But, you know, you got Noah. So combine the two of us. There you go. Combine all three of us. You've got every gender on the planet, evidently. Lucy's doing the heavy lifting, of course. But yeah, no, I mean, that's it. There's just one thing left to do.
Dun dun dun!
It's the Quickfire Quiz!
D-Trans Edition!
So the rules for the Quickfire Quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after finish asks the question wins. What do they win, Noah?
Love.
Okay, and what is your buzzer?
My buzzer is ooh.
And Lucy, what is your buzzer?
Eat.
Fantastic! Okay, and so my question for you is, what is the definition of detransition?
Ooh.
Lucy!
The definition of detransition in an academic sense is the halting or the reversal of one's medical transition.
Ding, ding, ding. That is correct. Well done. You win some love.
Win love.
Fantastic. Not just from us, but from everyone. Well, that is all from us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons, with an extra special thank you to executive producers Rev Lunar and Glitch Rabbit. And thank you for listening. You can find the four references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and SciGuysPod.com. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCory everywhere.
You can follow me at NoahFince everywhere, apart from Twitter, where it's NoahFinAdams, and TikTok, where it's TheNoahFince.
And you can find me on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter at LucyKartikasadi. So that's Lucy Kartikasadi without the Y.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.